And welcome to More Than a Movie, a show about films and filmmaking, here on Campus FM. My name's Andrew Bonello, and along with a guest I'll be welcoming onto the show very shortly, we're going to take a journey into the magical world of movies. This week, we're burrowing into mysteries to take you down the rabbit hole. Yes, that's right, whether one if by land, two if by sea, we'll be cracking open Pandora's box on several films that are great examples of mystery stories told through the medium of film. They'll be sure to keep you guessing until your goose caponata is well and truly cooked. But before we get to that, let me begin by introducing our guest for this week. Jameson Cucciardi is an independent director and film editor here in Malta. He directed his first feature, 20,000 Reasons, released in 2016, and also directed a 20-episode TV show called Maskra, which aired locally in 2013 and 14. Additionally, he helmed the award-winning short film Hostage and has assistant and second unit director credits. And Jameson joins me in the studio today. Welcome, Jameson.
Hi, thank you for your invite.
Great to have you on the show. So, Jameson, to start with, can you tell me a bit about when you first realized that film was going to be an important part of your life and your career?
Well, it's funny, actually. I mean, because it goes way back. I started out, actually, having acting lessons.
Aha.
I wanted to act. And then at some point on a summer recess of acting lessons, me and a friend of mine, we got together and talking, and he told me, what are we going to do this summer, just to have something to act on.
Right.
So we decided to write ourselves a movie.
Okay. You wrote your first short, in other words?
No, it was actually a feature.
Oh, wow, it was a feature. Wow. Okay.
Well, a nod of the head to most of our interests at the time, you know, like taking inspiration from things like Gladiator and stuff like that.
Okay.
And Tarantino movies, Mafia, Godfather.
And so, what was the story in a nutshell?
Well, in a nutshell, it was about this guy who comes out of prison, and he's trying to rebuild his life, basically.
Nice.
We acted in it, we directed it, we filmed it ourselves. At the time, it was still VHS cameras.
Yes, of course.
And we didn't have any batteries for them, so we're always pulling around a generator with us.
Oh, crikey.
Carrying around. And, well, I mean, and then that was my first experience in editing then, because I had started interesting myself in editing. And it felt like a calling, you know?
So you completed that film. You shot it, edited it, produced it. Wow,
yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it was we released it in a way with our families and friends, you know? But I mean, today I watch it and I laugh at it.
Well, but hopefully some fond memories as well.
Well, yeah. Definitely. Well, lots of fond memories, actually. It was a great summer.
That's awesome. Really, really cool, creative way to discover your call. And so then how did what marked the transition into sort of taking it more seriously as a career path for you?
Yeah. Then there was an opening for a video editing job at a local TV station.
I see.
I tried it out. I applied, and we had some training, and it felt the right place for me. So I started editing. Of course, editing a television program is different than editing fiction.
Mm-hmm.
But you start learning quite a few tricks of the trade, you know.
Sure. And what kind of content were you, was it? News content or documentary?
Well, mostly lifestyle programs. It was
okay.
Sports programs as well.
Okay.
I mean, in a TV station, anything comes in, you know.
Right.
Since it's a vast, as long as the producers keep inventing different stuff, you know.
You could be called on to work with a lot of different types of material.
Right. Exactly. But the aim was always to go for fiction.
Okay.
I had a very, well, today he's a very good friend of mine. At the time, he was also a mentor. He's still a mentor of mine today, Mark Doneo. And he was my manager at the TV station. So I immediately told him, listen, my aim is that I want to go into fiction. I want to direct drama. And he, at the time, was working on his own drama production.
I see.
Which was going to start production in a few weeks. And once we were at a social gathering, and he told me, what work do you have next week? Because I want you on set with me. And that was one of my, you know, wow moments.
One of your first big opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. And it was, again, another whole year of awesome memories, you know, on this fantastical TV series.
That's great. So then you directed a feature. Tell us a bit about that. What was that experience like, being a helmer of a full-length feature film?
Yeah, well, that was another learning experience in my journey, so to speak, of my life. It was actually a training program provided by the Malta Film Commission. We had applied with a script, and we had to be a team comprised by four people: a director, a scriptwriter, who was Malcolm Gallia, a mm-hmm. producer, Anthony Bezzina, and a director of photography, Malcolm De Bono.
Okay.
We applied, and since the project was in collaboration with Film London Microwave, the Film Commission and the Film London Microwave, there were other scripts which had applied, of course. But ours were selected and greenlit then for production. So it was like another summer of a very hot summer, actually.
Right, shot in summer. That's
yeah, exactly. But it was a great experience, and I learned a lot on it.
Of course, yeah. So here's a question for you then. Let's suppose you had an open budget. You're given an unlimited budget to make a feature film. What kind of a film would you make? Have you got any thoughts about a story you'd particularly want to tell, or particularly a genre you'd want to focus on? Or,
funnily enough, I'd focus on something mysterious.
Okay.
Not necessarily horror, though.
Right.
I like the thriller or the murder mystery, for example, a lot.
So you're kind of interested in film as a psychological storytelling.
Yeah, exactly.
Medium. That's interesting.
I mean, I think coming also from since my genesis is also that of wanting to act.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer focusing my efforts with working with the actors mostly.
Yes.
I give them priority over sometimes vision.
Mm-hmm.
I always take. I really love working with building their characters. So I always take it from a psychological point of view, anything I do. I'm also an avid reader of psychology stuff, so...
That's a really interesting combination. Okay. Great! Okay, well listen, so today's topic for the show is mysteries to take us down the rabbit hole. And I think you have a film in that subgenre that you wanted to talk about a little bit today?
At the top of my head, Inception comes to mind.
What's the most resilient parasite? An idea. A single idea from the human mind can build cities. An idea can transform the world and rewrite all the rules. Which is why I have to steal it.
So, Christopher Nolan's amazing, mind-bending 2010 mystery, crime, action thriller. What did you love so much about this film, Jameson?
That's a difficult question. I mean, I just love it. I love Nolan's work. But this Inception was also an inspirational point, since as we've heard from the trailer, an idea that can build worlds, and we are actually. Being in film is actually when you get an idea and you build worlds, you know?
That's true. More than one writer I've spoken to actually has talked about how the whole film can be seen as a sort of an allegory parallel for the filmmaking process.
Yeah, exactly. But even the dream within the dream, you know, as soon as you mentioned the topic of mysteries and that take you down the rabbit hole, it is actually, Inception is actually taking you down a rabbit hole.
very much so, yes. And it's such a multi-layered sort of complex narrative.
Yeah.
And yet, somehow, every time I rewatch it, I'm like, this is very, very tight storytelling.
Yeah, exactly. And you always discover new stuff. The more you watch it, the more stuff you discover.
Now, did you understand it on your very first viewing?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I was following the dream within the dream within the dream. So, yeah, I mean, I went to watch it with some friends, and they weren't they were getting a bit confused at some time. But I thought I could follow it, and I actually explained it to them what's happening. So I think yes.
Right, and what was the strongest element of the story? The strongest sort of moment for you?
I wouldn't go for well. As a moment, I think it's the very last part when we see the spinning top, which is like Nolan giving you, hey, I'm still, you know, I'm not gonna give you a whole answer,
still in
you
charge,
know,
yeah.
But Leonardo DiCaprio's drive, you know, his character's drive to be again with his children, especially, that was something a very good drive. To push the character with the choices he made.
Great motivation for the character. Great. Thank you so much, Jameson. So if Thank people you. Want to find out a bit more about your work, is there somewhere they can go online?
They can access my Vimeo page, which is www.vimeo.com/JamesonCocciardi.
Okay.
And they can find some of my works there.
Fantastic. Really good to have you on the show, Jameson.
Great
and we
you.
Hope we'll be seeing more of your work on the big screen very, very soon. Now then. What about mystery movies that were shot here in Malta? Well, back in episode 4 of the show, we discussed Kenneth Branagh's 2017 remake of the classic Agatha Christie movie Murder on the Orient Express, a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside of an enigma if ever there was one. And since here we appreciate repetition about as much as a mouse appreciates finding a wedge of cheese still wrapped inside its plastic packet, let's find another locally shot film for today instead. Going back a few more years, I discovered the 2006 British television movie Ghost Boat, when British submarine Her Majesty's Scorpion, which disappeared during the Second World War, suddenly re-emerges from the Baltic Sea some 40 years later, the sole survivor from the original vessel is beseeched by naval intelligence to help piece together what happened in the submarine's final days.
Your British naval intelligence, senior position, I'd say. What? Commander? Yeah. And you've flown all the way over here to the middle of nowhere because the Scorpion has come back and you want me to help you.
Well, this unusual genre piece, which actually aired in two separate installments on the Tube, stars veteran British actor David Jason. Yes, it's Del Boy Trotter from Only Fools and Horses fame. Of course, Jason is known for countless other famous comedy and dramatic roles. In Ghost Boat, he plays Professor Jack Hardy, that old submarine's sole survivor, now suffering from amnesia about the original events that led to the vessel's disappearance back in the 1940s. Indeed, the opening scenes of the film show his character living a simple, rustic life here in Malta back in the early 1980s. When the rediscovered vessel is towed into Malta's very own Grand Harbour for refitting, the Royal Navy doggedly convinces him to board the sub and start piecing together his own fragmented past. Now, the submarine used in filming here is apparently a non-diving replica built in Malta as the modified S-33 sub for the Matthew McConaughey war film U-571. That film was helmed by action director Jonathan Mostow in the year 2000 and was, of course, also shot here in Malta. So those of you hankering for a little bit of local nautical fare with something of a supernatural bent, make sure your oxygen tanks are full as you take a dive into the briny depths on the Ghost Boat.
This is impossible. There's practically no degradation here. The contacts are all good. What's our battery status?
In the green. Circuit breaker's open, but there's juice in the cells.
I don't know where she's been. She's not been at the bottom of the sea.
Venturing beyond Malta's rocky shores now, let's discover more mysteries to take us deep into the rabbit hole. And we'll remain seaborne for the time being, as our next film is Barry Levinson's 1998 science fiction mystery, Sphere, when a team of scientists are taken deep under the ocean's surface to investigate a 300-year-old alien ship. They're soon left floundering as they seek to uncover the true nature of the threats that surround them.
That's what we're going down there to see, isn't it?
What?
Who says we're going down there?
Harry, that's a joke, right? I mean, you're kidding. This is the greatest scientific discovery since Copernicus. It's bigger than Copernicus. The idea that we're not alone will change everything. We have physical evidence that there's extraterrestrial life. You don't want to see that?
Well, I gotta say, I resent this briefing very much.
And how's that, Harry?
If Norman's report calls for a biologist, a mathematician, an astrophysicist, and a psychologist, why are you here?
This is a film based on a Michael Crichton book. Now, you might recognize his name as the author of several stories turned into blockbuster genre movies, including, of course, Spielberg's groundbreaking Jurassic Park. But Sphere, with its all-star cast, including Dustin Hoffman, Sharon Stone, and Samuel L. Jackson, opened to very poor critical and box office reception back in the late 90s. Now, on this show, I could just recommend you movies that were darlings of the film critics, but I don't really think that's my role here. If I think a film got a raw deal, I'll say so. This, in the hopes you might check it out and make up your mind for yourself. Now, it should be noted that 2 years earlier, in 1996, Levinson directed Sleepers, a crime thriller starring Brad Pitt, Kevin Bacon, and Robert De Niro. That's another solid movie of his that got a pretty mixed critical reception upon release. Back to Sphere, then, and yes, it's still considered a bad movie today in many circles. I remember feeling a bit underwhelmed when I first saw this film back in the 90s, but I revisited Sphere recently and I was struck both by how well it has aged and by what a quality production this film is. There's a lot of challenging waterwork and very nice production design, given that the whole film essentially takes place in and around underwater spaceships. So that's lots of huge sets that required construction.
So you're saying the spacecraft crashed 300 years ago?
288.
Well, that's impossible.
Well, it's not impossible if this spacecraft came to Earth from an alien civilization.
Wait a minute. You think this is an alien spacecraft?
See, it's not impossible. It's ridiculous.
We think there's an unknown life form on this spacecraft, and that's why you're here. You are the human contact team that was recommended in the Goodman Report.
And whilst this might all sound a little batty, I urge you to give the film a chance. Crichton has done his homework here, and a lot of the story developments can actually be seen as a modern tipping of the hat to many of the great classics of sci-fi and fantasy literature, including, of course, the classic 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Don't get too excited, Ted. Turn this thing over, it'll probably say made in Korea.
Somehow I doubt that, Harry.
No doors, no hinges of any kind.
I'll bet you if you put a laser micrometer on this thing, you'd find that it was a perfect sphere. I mean perfect, down to the thousandth of an inch. That's a message in and of itself.
Really? What do you mean?
Here's the problem. Today, in 2021, people are fairly unlikely to read that Jules Verne novel, right? Or indeed, any number of other fantasy classics by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Edgar Rice Burroughs, and so on and so forth. Indeed, most are unlikely even to watch some of the films based on such classics, such as the 1954 Kirk Douglas movie based on the Jules Verne novel. But take note, my fine-feathered friends, for as we've discussed on the show before, many of the best stories, themes, and character arcs date back hundreds of years, including, I might add, those you're seeing told in superhero movies made today by Marvel and DC Comics. So if you want a more modern-looking introduction to some of the greats of underwater sci-fi fantasy, Sphere is a very respectable place to start.
Can I ask you something about this reflective surface?
Yeah, it appears to be mercury, doesn't it? Except mercury's liquid at this temperature.
Oh, no, that's not what I'm talking about. What worries me is that it's reflecting everything but us. I hate to be the one non-scientist that picks this up, guys. You know what I mean?
Remember, today's subgenre is mysteries that take you down the rabbit hole. Indeed, a main reason I've included Sphere in the show today is because it really is just that. As events aboard the underwater vessel get stranger and stranger, the film does a very good job at putting us in the confused shoes of the hapless crew members, apart from one of them, who seems to know far more than he has any right to.
That's the heart of darkness. We go there.
Is there heat coming off this thing, or is it just happy to see me?
Anybody else wonder who the hell opened that door?
There are themes of underwater exploration, alien contact and communication, and survival deep underwater. The film boasts a quality orchestral soundtrack by Elliot Goldenthal and solid direction of actors by Levinson. You can do a lot worse than this underrated piece of modern sci-fi mystery. We change to a decidedly different tack for our next movie, and indeed, to a decidedly different language, too. It's the 2006 German drama Das Leben der Anderen, which translates to The Lives of Others. In 1984 East Berlin, an agent of the Stasi secret police conducts surveillance on a writer and his lover, but he soon finds himself becoming increasingly absorbed by their lives. Now, this film won the 2007 Academy Award for Best Foreign Film, and I can see why. This is a superbly made mystery thriller, and a film that I found surprisingly moving. Our protagonist, played with cast iron stillness here by Ulrich Mühe, is an intimidating little man who, frankly, we initially rather hate in the film. But watch and marvel at how narrative and character acting can transform our perceptions. A mystery working on more than one level, the film posits challenging ethical dilemmas for several characters in the story, whilst at the same time keeping us guessing about where the tale will finally end up. Talk about going down the rabbit hole. This one will have you munching on your own crisp packet if you don't take a moment to watch what you're putting in your mouth. As always, I'll leave plot details thin here, but suffice it to say, this is essential viewing for anyone with an interest in genre movies made outside of the Hollywood studio system. There are themes of espionage, voyeurism, fidelity, and the isolation of a life half-lived. There's nuance, suspense, romance, and drama aplenty in this quite excellent entry in the canon of modern European cinema. Highly recommended. Finally for today then, we jump right up to 2020 for David Pryor's delectable psychological mystery, The Empty Man. An ex-cop on the trail of a missing girl discovers a secretive group attempting to summon a terrifying supernatural entity.
We can't get through the pass, not in this storm.
Did you see someone out there?
No, just you.
What?
What were you doing out there?
There was... someone out there, he chased me. Want to get out?
Come on, calm down.
Do not tell me to calm down. We need to leave.
Now, at first glance, this film might appear to be treading very similar ground to tropey studio movies like 2018's Slender Man and many earlier films of a similar vein. And to be sure, those studio flicks themselves are all really riffing on a concept from 1998's Japanese horror film Ringu, also known as The Ring. But don't be fooled, The Empty Man is a far more ambitious and sophisticated piece of filmmaking. I mostly steer clear of recommending really new films on this show. That's mostly because I find that new movies tend to be such disappointments, rarely holding a flame to older predecessors, from which they usually heavily borrow anyway. Here, though, I'm making an exception. The Empty Man opens with, I'm not kidding, a 22-minute prologue. Fans of Breaking Bad will recognize Aaron Poole here, giving a creepily understated and disturbing turn. It's an opening that, in and of itself, is already a strong piece of genre cinema, and certainly one that's steeped in mystery.
You're right. You stand up.
Touch me. I'll die.
What? What do you mean if I touch you?
Thereafter, though, we jump forward some two decades to meet our protagonist as the film switches pace to apparently become a by-the-numbers police detective procedural. Really, it's intriguing to watch the switches of tone in this very moody and atmospheric genre piece. It's quite superbly shot and lit throughout, and there's an absolutely terrific long zoom shot, which begins from above a map sitting on a car seat, then pushes in, and in, and in. It's incredibly well done. Totally seamless effects work here.
Hey, wait. We gotta try it.
Try what?
Calling the empty man.
Who's the empty man?
If you're on a bridge and you find a bottle, you blow into it, and you think about the empty man. Oh, come on, Mandy. How old are you?
A word about our lead actor here, James Badge Dale. I've already seen him in at least two other films. This actor really should be getting cast a lot more. He did fine work as the detective in Jeremy Saulnier's otherwise very disappointing 2018 thriller, Hold the Dark. And Dale also had a big role in the unusual heist movie, The Standoff at Sparrow Creek, from that same year. Here in Empty Man, James Badge Dale really sinks his teeth into the role of a former cop with a troubled past. He's clearly having understated fun with all of this, with a performance that's both compelling and completely believable.
Excuse me, DeVar? DeVar Walsh? Hi, I'm James Asombra. I'm a friend of Amanda's.
Yeah, I know who you are.
Oh, I am. Well, do you know where Amanda is?
No.
No. You know why she might run off?
To heaven.
You know smoking's bad for you? All right. Get in the car.
The film's also deeply unnerving in several places. I wouldn't call this out-and-out horror. It mostly eschews cheap jump scares, choosing a creeping sense of dread instead. Certainly not for the faint of heart, though.
Some drunk or a bum or something. Let's go, please. Please.
But it's not perfect. To be sure, the movie's too long by some margin. As the final act gets into gear, though, we really dive down into the supernatural rabbit hole in a conclusion that I found both impactful and pleasingly circular, as is the way with so many good supernatural tales. So if it's spooky mystery with a modern bent that thou seekest, don't go blowing into any bottles whilst standing on an empty bridge, will you, for goodness sake? Instead, broast yourself some popcorn and find a big fat pillow to hide behind. Then email in to tell me what you thought of The Empty Man. So, what did you think of the movie selection in our show? We'd love to know what you thought of it. For all of that and any other feedback, suggestions, questions, please email us at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs, all one word, @gmail.com. This episode was written and presented by me, Andrew Bonello. A big thanks to our guest, Jameson Cucciardi, for joining us, and also, of course, to our mysterious sound engineer for the day, Redent Abdillah. The intro music was Creepy Comedy, and the outro is Inspiring Teaser, both by Raphael Crux at filmmusic.io, licensed under creativecommons.org version 4. Thanks for listening, and I do hope you'll join us again next week on More Than a Movie, when we'll be exploring medieval movies delving into the woods.